Okay, I'd like to call the meeting to order. We have a quorum present, and what I'd like to do first, and it's on your agenda, you all should have received a communication from Larry Shelto that the bills that we dealt with last week in the end were not needed. The various veteran home requests are on the list, including the two we were talking about last week and two earlier ones. So what the chair will do is move that we reconsider House File 109. And then after we've reconsidered that, I'll just lay the bill over, and then we'll do the same with House File 903. Both authors have been consulted. I met with Larry Shelto last week, and as you know then, because you all should have received it, he sent a letter explaining what the situation was and why the bills were no longer needed. So that's the current status. So House File, the motion to reconsider House File 109 is before the committee. Any discussion? Seeing none then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. And the chair moves then that House File 903 be reconsidered. Any discussion on that one? Same issue, just a different location. One was, by the way, Brainerd, and the other was Bemidji. Seeing none then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, motion carried. And the chair will just simply lay those two bills over then because they're no longer needed.
If I might.
Yeah, Rep. Semple.
In that letter, it confirmed that the Montevideo and Wilmer applications were still active and in the queue. Was there any discussion if the state no longer views those as a higher priority than Bemidji or Brainerd, what the process is? Or
there's they will go through the process with the FETs. They're on the list, and as far as I understand it, I think all four of them are on an even keel, if you will. Although it appeared that the department is interested in northern Minnesota from the testimony we had the other day. And then you get into the Bemidji, Brainerd, but they're all up there for consideration.
Right, but I guess it would be unfortunate if in the feds in their consideration view Wilmer and Montevideo as a higher priority, and that's not what the state's priority is. I mean, that.
They have to come back here, you know, in the end.
But could we...
I don't know if Representative Houseman is here, but that involves some bonding and so on. And so there's just a lot down the road. But the main issue that both the communities wanted to have accomplished was to make sure they were on this list for consideration along with the two that were put on earlier. And so that's where they're at.
But I guess my point is, how do we avoid having the feds sign off on Wilmer and nothing else, and then here we sit with federal approval for a facility that we probably wouldn't support at a state level, and I'm just using this as an example. I don't know that that's the case. How do we avoid that problem?
That's a good question. I suspect the department will be providing input, and it seemed to me from the testimony we had the other day when they were talking about the concentration of where veterans are that they were looking at northern Minnesota. I don't know if there's anybody present from the department that can answer that. Pardon? Yeah. Nancy suggested maybe we get the information as part of a follow-up.
Right, thank you.
So, because we don't really have the answer to that right now. okay, we have House File 819, Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 819 is a technical housekeeping bill that could be contained in the state government bill, but the Public Facilities Authority and Mr. Freeman have asked that it travel by itself so that in anticipation they could get off the ground faster to notify eligible entities in the state, cities primarily, of the technical changes that are being made in House File 819, which addresses funding that the Legacy Committee will appropriate, hopefully, from the Clean Water Fund and I think the Clean Water Fund to the PFA. Primarily, what we're doing, we're expanding the eligibility criteria for TMDL and phosphorus reductions in the WIF grants. And we're expanding the criteria so that more cities are eligible and that PFA will have the opportunity then to notify the cities in a proper manner quicker than the money is going to be appropriated. And so when the money is available and ready, the cities will also be ready and available. Mr. Freeman from PFA is here to answer complicated questions. But I would like to also note that there's a change in title to Point Source Implementation Grants now in the stat will be the name of the statute grants or the grants in statute, and that is part of the housekeeping.
Okay, well, the first thing we need to do, Representative Murphy, is have a motion on the bill. Representative Wagenius, I think that went through your committee. Would you care to move the bill?
I would do that, thank you.
Okay, the motion is before us that House File 819 be adopted and placed on the General Register. Mr. Freeman, what we generally do in this committee, rather than formal testimony, because that was taken earlier, is have the witness available for questions. So any questions of the author or Mr. Freeman? Well, seeing none, then Representative Wagenius renews her motion that House File 819 be recommended to pass and placed on the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carried.
Thank you.
Representative Dill is next. Maybe while we're waiting for Representative Dill to get set up, I think Representative Wagenius, this bill went to a couple of committees, but yours was last. Would you care to make a motion?
I would do that.
On House File 742. Okay, Representative Wagenius moves that House File 742 be recommended to pass and placed on the general orders.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Representative Wagenius, for moving the bill. First, Mr. Chairman, Section 40, which is on page 20 of the bill, beginning on line 20.17, that was removed from the bill in Representative Wagenius' committee, and during the re-engrossment process getting it to this committee, it was not reflected in the bill that you have before you. So this is a technical amendment only to reflect what happened in another committee, and I'd like to move to delete Section 40, which is the same motion that I made in Representative Wagenius will make that motion.
Mm-hmm. If you would, you'll have to make motion on your behalf.
Yes.
Yeah, Representative Wagenius.
Yes, I would make that motion.
Okay, the motion is before us to the technical correction. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Okay, Representative Dill.
All right, thank you. And then to the fiscal note on the bill itself. This has the fiscal note primarily has to do with the rearranging of fees on licenses, particularly on youth, for youth and non-resident small game, for turkey, for deer license, etc. And what we're doing is we're in the bill. The agency has recommended that the prices and the adjustments to these licenses, including what's called the super sport license, be adjusted so that they are the same rather than having them being, as in the law currently, $15 and $5. I don't know if anyone has questions on that. It has gone through two committees already. It's been completely non-controversial, and the fiscal note you can see before us. I don't know if there's someone here from DNR that would like to come up, and Mr. Meyer's here. If anyone has any questions about the technical nature of this, ask for Mr. Meyer to come forward and explain that. Or Mr. Vaugus, I guess, is here. I got a note from Mr. Meyer saying the agency can absorb the cost. So does anyone have any questions of Mr. Vaugus from the department?
And that cost was, what, about $15,000?
Yes, $15,000. Right. And I just have a handwritten note here. It says from Mr. Meyer that the DNR can absorb that cost.
And I see he's present. And if you wanted to comment, not necessary, but if you wanted to.
Mr. Chairman, members for the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. The reductions actually come from providing non-resident youth licenses reductions. Basically, we charge all resident youth $5 for their licenses. What we propose, and we had this last year, but we didn't get it through, was to make non-residents the same as resident youth hunting, so reduce those licenses to $5. We feel that the added income by them bringing their parents or the money that they will spend in the state will more than offset those costs.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
That's the only, Mr. Chairman, that's the only fiscal issue that's been identified in the bill at this time.
Okay, there's an amendment in the packet, and I understand Representative McNamara, it was actually Hackbarth's amendment, but you were moving on his behalf for
Mr.
whatever the history is there, Representative McNamara.
Well, Mr. Chair, because I'm a member of the committee, this is Representative Hackbarth's bill, and he's worked with Representative Dill, so I'd like to move the A-10, and then it would be best if Representative Dill could explain the implications of the amendment. Thank
you. The motion is before us, and Representative Dill, I know we've talked about it. You're familiar with the amendment, so if you could explain it.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The fiscal impact, as you can see, if you have the fiscal note, I assume that you do, is there's nothing printed on the page. So I would assume that that is zero. What this does, the first part of the bill, is it establishes on page one and subsequent pages the ability to donate money to these individual accounts at the time of your registration. So, for example, if you were going to register your ATV, you could register it and pay the regular fee, plus you could make a donation to the fee. Now, I'm not certain that people will do this, but presently they aren't able to do this. I know that Representative Detmer is really in supportive of this. He wants to help as much as he can. So that is what this allows for, is grant and aid trail donations, the first section of the bill. And I was handed this just a few minutes ago. Youthful operations, could someone from, did Bob Meyer leave? Can you come down and talk about the youthful operations? What I believe this does, right now a person cannot, a youth between the ages of 12 and 16, as I understand, cannot operate an all-terrain vehicle on a bank, slope, or ditch of a public highway. But this is causing a problem. That's on page four, yeah. The changes. This is causing a problem with trails that are already exist in public right-of-ways for the purpose of avoiding obstructions, either buildings, cliffs, sensitive areas, wetlands, and things of that nature. So if you can imagine, if you're riding a trail, everyone is happy and all the kids are riding, and suddenly they have to turn out into the road ditch to avoid an obstruction, which is allowed if you have a safety certificate or if you're over the age of 16, you can no longer go forward because technically you cannot go out there during that age group bracket. What this allows for is for a youth to actually operate the ATV in the accompaniment of a parent or legal guardian. So the worst case scenario is I could... And Mr. Meyer reminded me that the person that's the parent or legal guardian that is operating with the children would also have to have safety training. So you'd have to be first a parent or legal guardian and have safety training before you could ride with the youthful operators in the road ditch. So what Okay, so what happens is that in practicality is that the children, the kids, I'm going to call them kids, they're not children, kids come to this obstruction, which is the road right-of-way, and then they have to stop. Or if they're with legal guardians or parents and they haven't had any instruction or don't have a safety certificate, of which is not required to operate an ATV with a legal guardian or parent, they then have to walk or ride with another person that can do that, and the ATV has to be taken to the other end of the obstruction, back out of the road right away, and then the kids can get back on it and continue. So I think you can see how this has become a problem, and I don't think that this really is a problem, except that some enforcement apparently has brought this to the attention of either the legislature or to some parent or guardian that inadvertently violated the law, the technical issue of the law, because it's a marked trail that's avoiding an obstacle. And most commonly in my area is a wetland. So, Mr. Meyer, what did I miss on that? Because I think I got a one item back.
Mr. Meyer, if you want to add anything to what Representative said.
Just real briefly, the language on 4.26 also requires that youth between 12 and 16 to have a valid all-terrain safety training certificate, so this person will be trained in all the safety requirements out there. Representative Dill did a very good job of outlining the obstacles that may be present that would represent why this would need to be done. Also, this is language that was brought forward by the ATV Association of Minnesota, so it's an ATVAM kind of policy bill that we've looked at all the language, and it does seem to be in order, and we can support it. So.
And when I talked to Representative Dill when I first became aware, I just want to make sure that it's clear then that there's no change in the trails or anything like that. It's just where that obstruction exists that you can go on where the trail already exists. And if you're
that is correct, Mr. Chairman.
Between 12 and 16.
That is correct, Mr. Chairman. And this is I view it as a technical issue. One question came up of should the county engineers be apprised of this change. The trail already exists in that county. The trail would already exist in that county's right-of-way for people that don't fit into this small window and category. So we don't anticipate that. Well, we have not heard since this amendment was first brought forward, a bill was first brought forward, anything from any, whether it be Department of Transportation, any county highway engineer, or anything of that nature.
Okay, any questions of the author or Mr. Meyer while he's there? Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick question. I think I heard you say the parent or legal guardian also possess a safety certificate. Does that mean, is that, it's not written here, but it must mean all adults do possess a safety certificate?
They don't need it.
Mr. Meyer, could you answer that about the requirement for the safety certificates on adults?
Madam Chair, Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, there is a cutoff age, before 1979, that you need the requirements, so older people like me don't need to have it, but I do have it. So, but all young adults and people moving forward do need to have that training requirement, and this does require that youth to have that, and they have to be accompanied by a legal adult. You also, if you look over on pages in existing language, 5.27 to 5.32, it gives the commissioner the authority to shut this down. Commissioner may limit the use of a right-of-way for a period of time. So we're working very closely with these trails, grant and aid trail coordinators and things to make sure this is done in a safe manner to help protect the environment.
Okay, Representative Clark, is that?
No, that's fine. I just was wondering.
Before we vote on the amendment, while Mr. Meyer is still there, I'd like Mr. Marks to talk about the fiscal part of the amendment.
Mr. Chair, members, we received a fiscal note late Friday for House File 1057, which has the contents of this amendment in it. You do not have that fiscal note in your folders. The fiscal and the costs on the fiscal note, or there are no costs shown on the fiscal note. The discussion in the fiscal note is that there are two cost type items in this amendment, neither of which the DNR could estimate costs for. One of them is the free weekend proposal that's in here, and the fiscal note discusses that this would allow users who do not register their ATVs in Minnesota to use the state or GIA trails on that weekend. This opportunity could result in a minor decrease in the number of ATV trail passes purchased for out-of-state ATVs. But then it suggests also alternately the free weekend opportunity might encourage additional non-state ATV users to ride Minnesota ATV trails for the first time, which might encourage them to buy trail passes in the future. So there's no cost associated with that. And then the other part of this, there's also language in here about making donations to these funds. And the fiscal note language says the donations would provide a long-term source of additional revenue to the affected accounts, but the revenue cannot be estimated. So there are no costs shown in the fiscal note, and essentially there's no way to score the changes in these amendments. So
my when I asked Mr. Meyer to remain at the front there, you have any additional comments to fiscal analysts' comments?
Mr. Chairman, members, I think Mr. Marks did a great job describing it. The other thing that fiscal note talks about is reprogramming the system, which we would pick up. We're going to need to reprogram the ELS system with some licensing changes that we talked about in the Game of Fish bill. So those costs may be reduced as well. But, you know, it's one of the things we try to do is recruitment and retention is a huge part of our mission. And this may be able to recruit some new people into this sport. So we do support the changes, and we can deal with the cost within the fiscal note.
Okay, any further discussions?
Mr. Chairman, I did want to just bring your attention. There was a question earlier about Section 12, which is on page 3, the no registration weekend and whether that needed to go to government operations. And I think Mr. Shepard had determined that that rulemaking process is already in place and that it did not to go to government operations. I just wanted to confirm that.
Yeah, and we had staff check into that before the amendment was offered, and Mark Shepard indicated it did not need to go to government up for the reason you cited.
I have nothing further on the bill or the amendment.
Okay, any further discussion? Seeing none then, Representative Wagenius renews her motion that House File 740.
We need to vote on the amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, excuse me, that's the McNamara amendment. Yeah, excuse me. Representative McNamara renews his motion that we adopt the amendment H0742A10. Any further discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. I was getting a little bit ahead of myself there. Now we have the bill before us as amended. Any further discussion, Representative Davin?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for the department. I was just reading through the bill, and I'm wondering about the page 24, lines 25 through 33, wildlife restitution value for sandhill cranes. I know nothing, but do we not currently have a restitution value for sandhill cranes in rule? Is this going up, down, sideways? What's going on there? Can you help me?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Davity, this is establishing a restitution value. This hunt was established 2 or 3 years ago by the commissioner, and with that, there was no restitution value put into statute. This is similar to other game species that we have, so if a person violates the law and takes one of these, this would be the base value that they would have to pay. There would be other penalties and things. There may be other penalties and fee fines associated with that situation, but this is just for the value of the animal. We have the same thing for deer, for fish, things like that.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, sir.
Any further discussion on the bill as amended? Okay. If not, then now Representative Wagenius renews her motion that House File 819 as amended be recommended. 742, as amended, be recommended to pass and placed on the general register. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried.
Thank you.
Now we have Representative Lilly.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members.
Welcome to the committee.
I'm a little nervous. I saw Mr. Neumeister around. I didn't know I had any data practices stuff. And then I see Representative Pawlowski up there with his book, so I'm always nervous about that as well.
Okay. You can really, this is friendly committee.
Exactly. Good morning, sir.
This was the non-committee. Well, the one committee member you were nervous about. Okay. We need a motion. The chair moves that House File 1069, the first engrossment, be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register. So the motion is before us, and Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also have an amendment. I don't know if you want to hold off on that or if you want to...
Choice is yours. We can either adopt the amendment and then you can explain the bill as amended, or you can explain the bill and then take up the amendment. Why don't we adopt the amendment and get it in the order that the author would like?
Thank you, sir.
And let's see.
Mr. Chair. Were these additional contract settlements discussed in any other committee or that are in the amendment?
Representative Lilly.
Mr. Chair and Representative Holberg, they were discussed just in one committee, the subcommittee on employee relations. But you are correct, they have not. The bill, the main part of the 1069 had two stops, well, three, I suppose, the subcommittee employee relations and the jobs committee and then state gov. So we're just trying to catch these up, and historically it hasn't been too much of a problem, but it's up to you if you want to wait. I'm certainly open to that, Representative Holberg, and talk about it or whatever you prefer.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Lilly, it's really up to the chair what he's going to allow for amendments in his committee, and I was just curious whether this information had gone through the process like the other part of the bill or not.
The author and I talked about it, and he indicated to me he would like to move forward with the one bill, and it had gone through the subcommittee. We talked about the history, but it hadn't gone through any other committees, so we'll leave that up, I guess, to the committee from what the chair just said. So what I'll do is the chair moves that the amendment H1069A3 be adopted. Any discussion on the amendment? Representative Holberg, anything else?
Mr. Chair, I don't serve on these labor committees, and I understand that there's some oversight and the fact that the base bill went to these different committees and then we're adding on more contracts here in Ways and Means. I don't know the ramifications if the other chairs have signed off, the chair of the labor and state government or...
It was just pointed out that, by the way, the memo from Mr. Hubinger has got these two summarized.
So Mr. Chair and Representative Holberg, your points are very valid. There's nothing, you know, I don't question them. 2008, we did a similar kind of process where contracts were ratified and caught up exactly in this same committee, and I wasn't doing it at the time, but in kind of honesty, the first grouping of contracts are probably more controversial than the amended ones. So, I mean, if I was your team, I would just say that there's plenty of material in the first groups, probably more than the amendment.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Lilly.
Representative Lilly, do you want this amendment to go on?
I'm just trying to be honest, sir.
But I think we have to get some clarification from you as the author. You indicated earlier you would like the amendment to go on so that the package would move forward. So I think we have to have some clarification from the author in terms of what direction you would like to go.
Mr. Chair and members, I would appreciate it if you would move the bill forward for discussion with the amendment attached and then have it go forward from there.
I think we just need your clarification on your desires as the chief author. Okay, Representative Holberg.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think the clarification is more yours in that whether or not you're going to entertain amendments in your committee for language that wasn't heard in other committees. I mean, that's setting a precedent that's a little unusual. These are more than technical type amendments, and you know, if that's what the standard is for the committee, then I hope that that will be applied equally in the future.
Well, these are, as Representative Lilly and I talked, as he pointed out, this has been done before. It's just a simply, I view it, this is a timing issue. They've reached an agreement between the administration and the unions. Unfortunately, they didn't reach that agreement a few days ago. The author indicated to me he would like to move forward. There was some history of doing this kind of thing, and so I was comfortable with doing that. But like I said earlier, we'll let the committee decide what they would like to do. The amendments before us for discussion. I don't think either of the agreements is in controversy. That's what is important to know. Holberg, any further? Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I just want to say I certainly don't begrudge these people their contract being ratified. To Representative Lilly, my friend, tongue-in-cheek, I really don't care what our team has for talking points or not. But the concern I think that we share is the process here. And I have seen these things short-circuited is a poor choice of words. Let me think of a better phrase, where we kind of jump ahead in line sometimes because of timing, prudence, and just economy. But usually we have a clear word to the committee that the chairs of the committees that would have heard these things have seen them and signed off on them. I think at a minimum that would be something we'd want to expect, because we're really interested in here, I think, as all of us, is that the process and the public transparency is protected, that people do have a chance to drill down into the bills and committees where the heavy work is done, usually not here in Ways to Be Mean, but in the other committees. So, Mr. Chair, I guess my question to the author of the amendment is, and maybe Mr. Huginger can help us, if we don't adopt the amendment today, do the wings fall off of anything, or is there another quick route we could take to bring this up again? That's my question.
Mr. Chair and Representative Beard, I don't believe there's another quick option or reasonably timely. There's other contracts that are out there as well, and we'll be writing separate, in perhaps like a month and a half, or well, towards the very end of session. So unfortunately, I don't see Chair Nelson this morning, but we did have an opportunity to go through them pretty deeply. Minority members had, which were predominantly the questions, had we had almost 2 hours of hearing on the bills. That was the only item on our agenda, was the contracts, and was actually the amendment. And we talked about those for 2 hours. So they were discussed, and that was pretty much the total focus. Although, in fairness, I was a little surprised because they're quite similar. I mean, it's a 2% bump, the main body of the three contracts that are in 1069 and the compensation plan. So I find there, if I were perhaps you, I would have more interest in those than the amendment myself. But again, that's not what you wanted to hear, and you kind of told me not to say that.
The brief answer then, Representative Lilly, to the A3 amendment is these two were vetted in the LCC subcommittee for a couple hours. Is that what I just heard you say?
Mr. Chair and Representative Beard, that is correct.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson.
I can defer to Representative Holberg. I think she wants to speak to that.
I was just going by the list.
No, I'm sorry. Thank you. Can you tell us the cost of these different settlements, the dollar amounts associated with them?
Representative
Lilly. Mr. Chair and Representative Holberg, would it be okay if we actually voted on the amendment, got it in the shape that I'd like, and then I have a a pretty decent presentation that Mr. Hubinger could go through of all the contracts that are involved.
That's fine. I don't, whatever.
Okay, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Lilly, that was one of my questions as well, is what are we talking about as far as the cost for these different agencies? I have one more question for you. I'm interested to know what is the maximum raise possible under this that you're looking to do, if you can give that information. But then also for you, Mr. Chair, you know, given the fact that obviously this is going to be a cost to the different agencies, are you going to be adjusting your targets then to reflect the increase in cost to the state agencies, or what is your plan on that?
I think Mr. Hubinger will be commenting on that, but being that there seems to be some interest in the amendment, I think we better focus our comments right now on the amendment that's before us. So you've heard the question about cost, Mr. Hubinger.
Mr. Chair, are you going to be adjusting your targets at all?
You'll learn about what the cost is, and then that'll answer the question. Mr. Hubinger.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm Greg Hubinger with the Legislative Coordinating Commission and the Subcommittee on Employee Relations. The amendment would add two contracts, with the Government Engineering Council and with the Minnesota State University Administrative and Service Faculty groups. I don't have a separate cost for just those two contracts, although they're itemized on the last page of the summary that you received. The contract with the Engineering Council will cost $1,700,000 this biennium and have a cost of $6.5 million on the 14-15 biennium. And the contract with the Administrative and Service Faculty will have an impact of $2 million this biennium and $4.46 on the 14-15 biennium.
Representative Anderson said the situation is exactly the same as the contracts that, or the contract that was ratified by the Minnesota House the other day, a couple of weeks ago.
But, Mr. Chair, that doesn't tell me if you plan to change your targets then for each of the different committees, given the increase in costs from these. So I assume that you're not going to be increasing the targets at all. So
what happened with the previous contract was that the understanding was that the agencies would absorb those costs, and that's what I'm saying is the situation here. The agencies are absorbing the cost for the ratification of these three contracts.
And since this wasn't heard in those other committees, are we going to have a discussion about how the agencies are going to absorb those costs here, since they won't be heard in their regular finance committees? Are we going to be talking about what does this mean for services for students at the Minsky system at all?
Representative Lilly, you had discussions in the subcommittee. Can you answer that question for Mr. Hubinger?
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, that's a good pointed question. The fact is that, you know, the departments have gone through these before, and they kind of know the process of how they'll be absorbed. It typically doesn't impact service as much as one might think, but specifically, you know, I'm not certain.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Lilly, in particular on the Minsky contracts, do we have an idea of what this means for each individual Minsky college? How is each college going to be impacted, and what kind of cuts they're going to make in services to students throughout those different campuses? Or do you have any detail on that at all?
Mr. Chair, I just had an opportunity, and Representative Anderson had a chance to. Mr. Hubinger has a much better answer to that than I do. So,
Mr. Hubinger.
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, I can provide an initial response, and Mr. Dale from Minsky, who negotiated this contract, might be able to provide more background. The general response by management when they have these kinds of increases is to do the standard thing of holding positions vacant not filling positions, delaying hiring, and relying on turnover savings where when people retire, they're replaced by people who have lower salaries, and you use those savings to pay for these costs.
And Minsky is present, so maybe you want to confirm what he just said or comment. I think we have to keep in mind that these are contracts that the administration has agreed to, and they wouldn't have agreed to them if they weren't able to cover the costs, because they had to enter into that agreement with their eyes open, I assume. If you could identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, my name is Christopher Dale. I'm the Senior System Director for Labor Relations with the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. With respect to the pending question, the budgeting for the in anticipation of these settlements was done at the prior to the beginning of the last biennium, and these settlements fall within the parameters of that budgeting, so that the institutions were asked to adjust their budgets to reflect the anticipated cost increases that would be associated with the contract settlements once they were reached.
Okay, so they are covered then. So, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Dale, Mr. Hubinger had mentioned that, you know, one of the ways that you're covering the costs is by not filling vacancies. Does that mean that we are seeing an increase in TAs that are servicing students in classes? Can you give us more detail on that, please?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson. I don't know the status of TAs. It is the substantial adjustment, I think, to our workforce occurred in the biennium that preceded this biennium that is just ending, and as a result of that, there were actual reductions in our allocations, and we actually had a reduction in total revenue. And so significant adjustments were done during that, the last biennium, prior to the current biennium. I don't expect that additional significant reductions have occurred, except on probably the reductions that have occurred have been only programmatic in nature, where a particular program no longer perhaps needed additional capacity that it had. A lot of those adjustments in our state colleges and universities can be done through non-permanent faculty, so through the use of fixed term or reducing fixed term appointments or reducing adjunct appointments as they occur. With the two-year colleges, those would be that contract isn't before.
Representative Nordis.
Mr. Chair, just a quick question. I'm just a little curious. I'm not clear on the Minnesota Nurses Association. Where are those nurses employed, and who would be impacted by this contract?
Looks like Mr. Hubinger.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nordis, there are approximately 750 nurses covered under that contract, and they are employed at the Departments of Human Services and Corrections, the Department of Health, and the Veterans Home.
Okay, Representative Holbert, you look like you're about to ask to be recognized. Representative Holbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just curious on the proposed amendment under the State University Administrative and Service Faculty, the lump sum payment of $400 not added to the base. Where is that shown on the back in your cost chart?
Mr. Hubinger.
Mr. Chair and Representative Holbrook, that would be included in the biennial new money column, the fourth number, fourth column from the right.
And Mr. Chair, if I might, so then that biennial new money is for this biennium and is not necessarily all added to the base?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holbert, the lump sum payment was a one-time payment.
And Mr. Chair, do you know what the amount of that is then?
Mr. Hubinger?
Mr. Chair and Representative Holbert, the cost of that lump sum applied to all of the faculty?
The $400 bonus or one-time money, what are we paying for that in the contract?
Perhaps Mr. Marks has a calculator, Mr. Chair, that it's about 740 faculty times 400.
Mr. Chair,
Mr. Marks,
294,000.
And if I might then, in looking at the line item for that contract, in the biennial new money, I'm trying to sort out the difference between, is the biennial base current law, and then the new money includes the 400, any steps and lanes, and the increased contract, is that right?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hobrick, the biennial base is a snapshot of the payroll at the beginning of this biennium, and then the biennial new money captures all of the costs of the increases that are paid this biennium.
And Mr. Chair, so in the biennial new money, does that include current steps and lanes of the current contract as well as the new contract?
Mr. Chair and Representative Holberg, unlike some of the other contracts, steps and lanes are not built into the Minsky contract. So the biennial base, the biennial new money would only have the proposed step increases that are in the proposed contracts before you.
Okay. If I might, then in other areas where there are steps and lanes already built in, before this contract, how would somebody parse out what is new money on top of existing contract? How would we do that?
Mr. Chen, Representative Holberg, Minnesota Management and Budget always calculates the cost of step increases as new money. It shows the additional money that's being paid in this biennium for the contracts, even if the provision for the step increases was ongoing.
And Mr. Chair, Mr. Hubinger, somebody must have the numbers when you are negotiating contracts of what current law steps and lanes were and what the new contract costs would be. So how would we get the accurate numbers for these contracts that would say what the cost would be above and beyond current law or current contract?
Mr. Hubinger.
Mr. Chair and Representative Holberg, those numbers are findable. We haven't tracked them here, but we can find those.
And Mr. Chair, I just think that in looking at this document on the back side of this, would be much more informative if we actually knew what the costs of the new contract were over existing contract, rather than what we have in front of us.
Minsky's, Mr. Dale, is that any information you'd have? Otherwise, Mr. Hubinger said that we could get that later.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, as Mr. Hubinger alluded, there are no automatic steps or lane changes in the either the IFO contract or the MUSAF contract that are included in this bill today. So there are no costs associated with that except those costs, except the steps, the one step that was negotiated in fiscal year 13 in each of those contracts. And those costs are reflected in the current biennial costs and then the biennium over biennium costs, because the steps do reflect an increase on base, whereas the lump sum does not, and it would only be reflected in the current biennial costs, but not in the biennium over biennium cost.
And Mr. Chair, I understand that, but I think we do have steps and lanes working in AFSCME and law enforcement, some of the other ones on the sheet. So it's probably more of a Mr. Hubinger question anyway.
And he said they were findable. I think he used his term. In other words, he could get it for us. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this question's for Mr. Dale, if he could come back. On the Minsky contract that we have here, what salary would receive the increase? What's the highest salary that would receive this increase that's presented here in this contract?
Mr. Dale.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, the highest salary currently in the IFO contract, there are two contracts before you and part of the bill, with the currently the highest salary in the IFO contract is $114,000, I think, $445,000. And I would have to check the USAF contract to determine the highest salary there, but I believe it's about $72,000.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We're getting into the bill. We should probably stay with the amendment at this point, which is the two additional contracts that the author wanted to have added. Representative Pawlowski.
Mr. Chair, thank you. This is to Mr. Dale. Mr. Dale, would I find the increase in these contracts in Minsky's current budget request, and if so, where?
Mr. Dale.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pawlowski, as with they were reflected in the base because the budgeting that was done within the system prior to the last biennium made an allowance for salary increases that were anticipated to be negotiated and an additional cost related to benefits, and those, so they were reflected in the budgeting that the institutions and the system office were required to do, and I don't believe they would be a line item necessarily in the
Mr.
budget.
Dale, that's not my question. My question is, there are two areas in Minsky's current budget request, a 3% in tuition increase, and then there are a series of what they called new funding programs. Which of the two would cover these contracts?
Mr. Dale.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pawlowski, current funding request is for funding going forward.
I understand that.
And these contracts are for the current biennium that that is currently funded by the last biennial allocation and tuition that was collected from the students.
Mr. Dale, my assumption is that you're also projecting forward. So in either of these two areas, in the current Minsky budget request, either the 3% increases in tuition or in the so-called new programming, would either one of those cover contractual obligations?
Mr. Dale.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pawlowski, as I understand it, these contracts would be covering the base allocation going forward, not in the request for new money.
Mr. Dale, so if they're asking for a base increase of 3% each year in tuition, that would be a base increase. Would that then cover contractual obligations?
Mr. Dale.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pawlowski, that presumably that money would be used to cover contractual obligations for new contracts that would be negotiated or would be in effect next biennium.
And Mr. Chair, Mr. Dale, then I would assume that the so-called new programs that Minsky presented in its budget request would not cover contractual obligations.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Pawlowski, only insofar, as I understand it, only insofar as the new programs would involve, of course, employees that are work and generally work under contract, so that there would be contract costs associated with those new programs. But these contracts that are before you today go into effect in the current biennium, and we would expect would be the costs associated with them would be reflected as part of the base allocation, not the new money.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Dale, there'll be contracts in the next biennium too, and we're funding for the next one. I'm just trying. Your confusion is mirrored by me in Minsky's budget request. That's all.
Okay. Any further discussion on the amendment? Okay. Seeing none, then all those in favor of H1069A3 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. We now have the bill before us as amended. Any further discussion? Representative Abler.
Oh, thanks. I just wanted to go back to the Pawlowski point again. I think I understand it, but I'm a little puzzled. So every department that is, we're ratifying contracts for this biennium, which is going to get over in a few months. And then there's tails on those, and as I asked the last time on the contracts that we ratified, the departments have made
provision for their this for the biennial cost this year, this biennium, to somehow absorb it. But there is no provision in the budgets or in staffing levels or anything to handle the 2014-15 cost of this biennial increase. Is that right? And I think Representative Plowski is asking, will it be a state government line item for the different departments increasing by whatever, 2% or whatever this amount is? Does that make sense, Representative Carlson? I'm just trying to understand. And I think that they have to solve their 2014-15 by attrition or by restructuring or finding the money somehow. Is that right?
Well, Representative Abler, there is going to be a cross-state government and MNSCU as well. There is a base adjustment that each of the committees is going to be making. Right. And then it'll be up to the collective bargaining process as to whether any or all of that base adjustment goes into contracts.
All
right. But so virtually every committee has a base adjustment that would be on the plus side, except the one that you happen to serve on, and you're working with that issue right now, but that's not so much the salary side in the case of your committee with Health and Human Services.
Right. So, Mr. Chair, so it is kind of unclear, but I'm just trying to understand this. In the last one, we were told there was no new money to fund any of this. But if there was new money coming forward, it would be in the budgets that are coming out this week.
For this particular contract, as MNSCU testified, Mr. Dale, apparently they did some pre-planning and they've covered these costs over the biennium. As we move forward, any additional costs relative to the collective bargaining process has to be resolved with the administration and the groups that are representing them, and they'll have to decide how much is on the table for any future contracts.
Right.
And that's part of the process. The legislature doesn't negotiate those contracts. The administration does with the various unions. And in the case of MNSCU, that's, of course, then through the MNSCU system, which is a little bit different than the state agency contracts. But Representative, if you have any more, Representative?
Well, just a comment. So actually, they're going to have to solve this somehow, but it's undefined. And it could be reforms or vacancies being left open, or they could shift their resources within to manage this bit along with everything. Thank you.
It's always undefined unless the legislature were to have, which it has done sometimes historically, to have a salary supplement. When you just deal with it with a base adjustment, then it is a little bit less defined, but it's resolved at the bargaining table through the collective bargaining process. Representative Pulowski?
Well, Mr. Chair, my question goes back to your point. We are making a base adjustment in the MNSCU system. That base adjustment hopefully will cover tuition. I would hope that covering tuition would also cover future costs, such as contractual. My confusion is when they propose new programs that didn't exist before, and somehow in those new programs there are contractual obligations that were not presented to the committee, that we were not aware existed, and that if they weren't funded, then there would have to be cuts. And it's confusing for me that in a program that didn't exist prior to this recommendation, that somehow you would have to make cuts because you didn't have the money in a program that didn't exist. So my point is, if they're asking for 3% and 3% in tuition, and that is to project forward what might be costs, including contracts, they should be forthright with that. If they are proposing new programs that didn't exist before, under the guise of covering contractual obligations, I'm beginning to have a problem with how they're proposing their budgets.
As they move forward.
As they move forward.
Yeah. These contracts here are dealing with basically the last 6 months of the current biennium. But I think the question is, there will be some costs moving forward as a result of the adjustments with the salaries as they move forward at the new higher base for the salaries. I think that's what some members are saying. But that will have to be resolved through the bargaining process. And Representative Dittmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Lilly. What What other? You mentioned some other contracts that haven't been settled yet by the administration, and what are they, and are they going to follow the same process, same path that these two contracts that we just amended to your bill? How are we going to deal with those?
Mr. Chair and Representative Detmer, the timing, I'm not exactly certain. I know I'm going to pass it to Mr. Huebinger, and they will be, I think they're going to be going separate because I think it's going to be quite a bit of time. I think I mentioned that earlier, that I think towards the very end of session perhaps. So let me pass to Mr. Huebinger and tell you.
Mr. Huebinger.
Mr. Chair and members, there are two contracts that are pending, one with the two-year faculty at Minsku and one with the Law Enforcement Association. It's not clear exactly when those will be arriving here, and then if they do, how we'd handle them. There are also two compensation plans, one for administrators at Minsku and one for unclassified employees at the Health Exchange that are to be submitted.
Oh, no.
Sorry to laugh.
Mr. Chair, maybe the chair or somebody could explain to me what path are they going to be following if the committees are completed? Are they going to bring the committees back to listen to these contracts and move them forward?
Mr. Chair and Representative Detmer, I think the path would probably involve late. You know, a deadline waiver, perhaps going through, rules for that, and then more than likely would make stops where it could along the way. I doubt that it would go right to the floor, of course. That would.
There'd be a couple of different, the way some people put it at times, off ramps to resolve the issue right up until we would adjourn. You'd have to deal with committees that don't have deadlines, and that could be a separate bill. If there were another bill that was dealing with the same subject matter, I suspect in some committee here or rules there might be an amendment. We just will have to cross that bridge, Representative Detmer, when we get there. Theoretically, I suppose if they don't settle before the session is over, that's an issue that comes up next January, but I think everybody's hopeful that they will get things done before we adjourn and that the issues can be dealt with. But we'll figure out a path at that point.
Yeah.
Representative Abler again.
Well, thanks. Just, I think I've got it figured out. I think we did a 6% admin reduction in 2011 for DHS for 12 and 13, which did result in a reduction of 220 spots net. I was just doing some research on that. And so just to caution the author and the people who are going to celebrate their increases, I don't know what the real cost of these is, if it's 4.85% or 1.5, I don't know, but whatever number this is, I think we're by not funding it and having a salary supplement bill with no plan in place for the future biennium, we are in fact putting an administrative reduction or a departmental reduction of these numbers into the department. And so what we heard when we did the 6%, the Senate had a 18% in the beginning, which was a little high. We didn't do that one because that would have decimated the department, they said, and they need these jobs. And so if you can manage your budget around not filling vacancies, then you wouldn't need that person in the first place. And so that's the implication. And so I hope that we don't hear that we can't get service at DNR and Department of Human Services because they're short staffed, because there were staffing cuts because of budgets that were held flat by increases that weren't paid for. And I have no problem giving these good working Minnesotan or state employees a raise. I think that's appropriate and I like it. Mm-hmm. But I'm just cautioning them that they might find the person next to them not working there anymore and their workload's going to go up. And I just, because I, as you mentioned, a salary supplement would have made sense, or Representative Pawlowski mentioned, you maybe should have had a little list for salaries going up, so then they wouldn't have been able to take away the new learners program or whatever thing they wanted to do. So I just want to understand this, and now I finally do, but I think the committee should understand as well what we're doing. And
I do want to make it clear, I wasn't saying advocating necessarily the salary supplement. I was saying that both approaches have been used. Historically, sometimes there's been a salary supplement. Other times, there's simply been a base adjustment. This time, what you're seeing is a base adjustment. And then it'll be up to the managers to determine how much of that base adjustment goes into salary, how much of it goes for other needs within an agency, and that, in terms of the salary side of it, is subject to the collective bargaining process.
Fair enough. I'll yield, but I
but
I just,
the money
I think
is going to be put on the table under both of those scenarios, either way, supplement or base adjustment, in terms of what ultimately is bargained for. Okay. I think that Mr. Lilly, the author and the chair of the commission, is shaking his head yes. So
that's correct.
Okay. You got anybody else on the list? Okay. Well, there's nobody else on the list. Any further discussion?
Oh, Mr. Chair. I'm just hoping Mr. Hubinger will provide for the committee members what the true costs of these different. I mean, somebody negotiated this. Somebody had to put a dollar figure in particular. The nurses' contract, this, you know, when you look at the cost of the $5,000 per calendar year for loan repayment and the $100 bonus for weekend work, somebody had to calculate how much that would cost. We'd like to see the real figures associated with the contract.
Yeah, and I think he made that commitment earlier, so just reiterating that. Seeing no further discussion, then the chair moves that House File 1069, the first engrossment as amended, be recommended to pass and placed on the general register. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. We do have the minutes from the previous meeting in the.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
You're very welcome.
I voted for the president.
Representative Dabney, you look like you've been studying something there. Was it the minutes?
It was the minutes, Mr. Chair, and I'd like to move their approval.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion on the approval of the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. We're going to be meeting virtually every day this week, so we'll see you again tomorrow. Meeting adjourned.